The Lord be with you.
And with your spirit.
A reading from the Holy Gospel according to Mark.
Glory to you, Lord.
On that day, as evening drew on, Jesus said to his disciples, "Let us cross to the other side." Leaving the crowd, they took Jesus with them in the boat just as he was, and other boats were with him. A violent squall came up, and waves were breaking over the boat so that it was already filling up. Jesus was in the stern, asleep on a cushion. They woke him and said to him, "Teacher, do you not care that we are perishing?" He woke up, rebuked the wind, and said to the sea, "Quiet, be still." The wind ceased, and there was great calm. He asked them, "Why are you terrified? Do you not yet have faith?" They were filled with great awe and said to one another, "Who then is this whom even the wind and the sea obey?" The Gospel of the Lord.
Praise to you, Lord Jesus Christ.
There was a priest who was a traveling missionary. He would travel around the country giving these parish missions, much like the ones that we've had here at our parish, at St. Madeline. One day, he was giving such a mission at a very rural church, a very small church in West Virginia, coal mining country. And this gospel reading about Jesus calming the storm at sea turned out to be the gospel reading for the day. And this priest said to the small gathering in sort of a humorous way, "I guess you're not very accustomed to having storms at sea here in West Virginia." Well, there was a bit of uneasy laughter, and actually one woman spoke up. She said, "Well, it was not all that long ago that we had a mine cave in here. Every one of us in this parish had someone, a husband, a father, a brother, some close relative that was trapped in that mine." That certainly was a storm at sea, as far as I'm concerned. And then an older gentleman spoke up. He said, "My wife was recently diagnosed with cancer, and we had to undergo chemo, radiation therapy, and I'll tell you, that was quite a storm at sea for us." You know, we tend at first to read things perhaps literally, but there are lots of storms at sea. Maybe the loss of a job, a crisis in marriage, children who are getting involved in the wrong thing, getting into trouble. I know that if I went around this church today, just about everybody here could tell me about a storm at sea in their life. And like the disciples in today's gospel, we know very well what it feels like to have the waves breaking over the boat to the point of wondering if the boat is gonna flip over. We know there are certainly people in Charleston, South Carolina now who are going through a storm at sea in their life as they grieve the loss of these nine individuals. We also know, I think, the feeling of helplessness that goes along with the storm at sea. because we realize at those times that we are not at all in control of our lives in the way we would like to think. Probably many of us even can relate to the feeling of Jesus being asleep and about how he seemed absent when we need him the most. Now we cry out just like those disciples in that boat, "Don't you care about me?" I'm willing to bet that all of us at one point of our life have known this feeling. Those storms at sea. To break stride a little bit, you may have noticed now for the past several months, we have been having a question-answer section of our bulletin. Right? This is an idea that was brought up by some of you as a way of educating ourselves in our faith. You ask questions and we try to provide answers for you. Well, in this week's bulletin, a question was submitted by a very fine Catholic woman, one that very seriously practices her faith. And she asked for some advice about how do you deal with people when they ask the question, why do we need a church in the first place? What good is it? I believe in Jesus. I'm a member of this invisible community of Christians. That I think is good enough. Why would I need a church with all of its rules and regulations, with its dogmas and its doctrines? I'll let you read the answer as it appears in the bulletin. For now, let me give you a little bit of a different perspective. There's a wonderful little book entitled That Strange Divine Sea. And it's written by the late Christopher Derrick. He talks about his experiences in his lifetime of practicing the Catholic faith. And in it, he gives an analogy between the practice of one's faith and learning to fly an airplane. Now, he learned to fly a plane long before the days when a computer could fly and land a plane for you. Okay? He learned how to fly back at the times when the pilot actually needed some skill to be able to pilot a plane. And he tells how in normal flight, flying a plane is really very simple. You keep an occasional eye on your instruments while primarily orienting yourself based on what you see outside your window, the world outside your window. And he points out how visual flight is a very straightforward affair, and how with little experience, pretty much anyone could learn how to fly without instruments at all. That's if the visibility is good. But visibility isn't always good. Night, clouds, storms can mean there's absolutely nothing to see outside your window. And you have to learn how to fly blind. It doesn't mean that you're actually blind. It simply means that you have nothing but your instruments to look at. Do we have any pilots here? I know Bob, you're over there. Okay, we have a pilot. Bob, I know your daughter told me you can fly a plane. We're not going to let you be shy. Huh? Most pilots, and I talked to some after the 7:30 Mass, most pilots will tell you that flying, the first principle of flying blind is that your feelings are often deceptive. You feel like you're going to the left when you're really going to the right. You think that you're going up when in fact you are going down. Am I right? Yes. We saw a tragic example of that some years back with when JFK Jr. was killed in a plane that he was piloting. During a crisis, during a storm at sea, a bafflement, a confusion, a panic arises in your mind as you struggle with contradictory signals from your senses and from your reason. The way we humans are made, there is a fluid in our inner ear that tells us about our motion, our sensation with respect to gravity, which always acts pointing straight down. It's what gives us our sense of balance. If you've ever had an infection in your inner ear, what happens? You lose your sense of balance. This balancing mechanism in our body sends a signal to our mind and says, you are strapped into a seat. That means you are now seated as level in this plane as though you were seated in a pew in church. But even though you feel as though you are your right side up, your aircraft instruments convey the message that your wings are tilted too steeply to the right, the nose of the airplane is pointing down, and your airspeed is way too slow. To judge by your feelings, or to fly by the seat of your pants, that's where that expression comes from, you literally can't tell up from down and left from right. That's what killed JFK Jr. and his passengers in that crash. He trusted his feelings over his instruments, is what the investigation told us. His instruments told him one thing, his feelings told him another. The Catholic Church and her doctrines amount to a set of instruments. They are entirely reliable to within their built-in limitations. They don't answer every possible question, but they do represent reality. They tell you what you need for survival during a storm at sea. During those times of darkness and confusion, when you can't seem to see anything, and every feeling you have tells you fatally to do something else. We wouldn't need a church if we were not fallen people, with our vision clouded by sin, original sin, and personal sin. Just like we wouldn't need flight instruments if we always flew in perfect weather. We need a church, and the church is there for, among other reasons, to get you through storms at sea. It's often during those times of helplessness, the kind of helplessness that brings us to our knees, that we hear Jesus say, just like we heard him say to his disciples, why are you terrified? Do you not yet have faith? How many of you here, I know you've told me some of you, how many of you here, when you look back at your storms at sea, have said, God was with me during it all. I may not have realized it at the time, yet I know now He was with me. Otherwise, I would never have gotten through the storm. How many times does what appear to be a tragedy in your life really turn out to be a blessing in disguise? That's the kind of faith that Jesus was looking for in his disciples in that boat. That's the kind of faith that Jesus is looking for in his disciples in his church. Trust. I know, of course, there is the other side of life as well. Sometimes the seas are not calmed, at least not how we want, or when we want, or in the way we want. When that happens, we call that the cross. While Jesus calmed the storm at sea, he also told those same disciples, unless we pick up our cross and follow after him, we cannot be his disciples. The cross. The cross is the real test of faith. That's the purpose for including this first reading from the book of Job. It reminds us that there is a bigger picture, one that we are probably not aware of. You remember the story of Job in the Bible? The book of Job tries to answer that ancient question of why do good people suffer? Job was a righteous and holy man, lived his life by God's laws and precepts in every way. And he was blessed by God in many ways, with wealth and family and land and all of the abundant blessings that God gives us. But as a test of his faith, God allowed a tragedy to strike Job, and Job loses everything. Everything he had was gone. Through it all, Job remains faithful. He does remain faithful, but not without complaining. Basically, Job decides he is well justified in having for himself a pity party. Job basically epitomized the expression, "Oh, woe is me," and God has something to say to him about that too. What we heard in the first reading today from the book of Job was just a tiny, tiny little snippet of what God had to say to Job about his pity party. He says to Job, "Were you there when I created the universe? Were you there when I set the stars in the sky and the planets in orbit about them? Were you there when I set the oceans in the sea and commanded them that you were to go this far and no further? You, Job, are not God, and you don't know what I know. Stop with the pity party. Basically, be a man," is what he tells Job. God eventually restores Job's blessings to him, 100-fold, 1,000-fold, but only after he stops questioning, after he stops questioning God and begins to trust God, even though he doesn't know why he suffers. Each one of us is sailing in our own boat in this life. Each one of us will meet up with storms at sea over which we have no control, and that will bring us the test. Will I be like Job and question, "Why me, Lord? Oh, woe is me?" Or will I choose to trust that Jesus is present with me, present in his church, there to comfort me during those hard times, there with me at every step of the way in the midst of that storm? Our entire journey in life, both good and bad, is a test of our faith. That's the message of today's readings. Even in the midst of a storm, when our boat is being tossed about violently, peace can be experienced, but only if we trust and believe that Jesus is right there with us. Peace is not the absence of the cross. Peace, true peace, comes when we embrace our cross, when we kiss our cross, when we put on the heart and mind of Christ with full confidence that God will see us safely through every storm.